Robin McCarron.
Hashtag authority. Hashtag Steph Bouncy. Hashtag SmackDown 15.
Jeff Hawkins.
You done digging that hole?
You're listening to Shake Them Ropes with Robin McCarron and Jeff Hawkins.
Dance on your grave, dirt sheet writer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Shake Them Ropes. It is September 1st, 2015. Rob McCarron here alongside Jeff Hawkins. Quite a bit to get to today, and in a change of pace, since Jeff Hawkins went to PWG's Battle of Los Angeles this weekend, we are going to get his live perspective from that show, and we're going to tie it back to WWE. And there are plenty of ways to do that. We're also going to talk about the big hits from Raw this week, anything worth talking about, and a question about Samoa Joe that we'll get to in a little bit. But first, Jeff, how are you today?
I have finally recovered. I have taken a nap, and, you know, I wasn't arrested for third-degree murder or fired due to pictures on my Instagram. I'm doing all right.
Yeah, it's been a crazy news week. For yes. WWE, I mean, it was a crazy day yesterday, and then all of a sudden we get more today. There's a lot going on. Most of it, I think all of it, actually, pretty negative.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into everything WWE.
Yes.
I want to ask you about the Battle of Los Angeles.
Whew. Yes. I survived all 3 days of the Battle of Los Angeles.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Reseda, California.
Mm-hmm.
All 3 days of Bola going up against a big Cubs-Dodgers series, in which a no-hitter was thrown on Sunday.
Look, nobody's listening to this for baseball, so let's...
No baseball talk, no hockey talk. Football season's coming up. Maybe we can talk some football. But no. PWG Battle of Los Angeles, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you got your tickets going in. There were no tickets sold, as far as I know, at the show, so everyone who went had to get their tickets early. We'll go through the days, we'll go through the results so everyone knows. And the reason why we're talking about this is not just because Jeff went there, but there are a lot of former WWE names. There are a lot of future WWE names that were on this show. So we're going to go through the results, get your topics, your thoughts about each night and the overall scheme of things, who impressed and who didn't. So we're going to go through that. If you would like to ask Jeff questions about his Bola experience, you can hit us up on the Voices of Wrestling forums or Crap Game 13 on Twitter. The show is at Shake Them Ropes. We are, of course, coming to you from voicesofwrestling.com. Bola, let's go through night one. All right. The day that set the stage for this tournament here. So it's a 24-man tournament for those who are unaware. It's a promotion in Reseda, California. They run once every 2 or 3 months. And this is their biggest show. A trio of shows, really. But it's their biggest weekend every year, the Battle of Los Angeles. 24 men. The final is a three-way. We have prelims on night one and two, and the finals on night three. The first night.
Well, let me set some stage here, because there are people who watch PWG on DVD.
Yep.
That
most people, in fact.
Yes.
Only 400 get to see these shows live. Jeff was one of 400 people that got to see the show live. Everyone will see it on DVD in about 3 to 4 weeks when it comes out. Maybe they'll surprise us and release it in two, but we'll see.
Right. I think the thing that is lost most of all on DVD, or when you watch it on video with or without commentary, is the intimacy of the American Legion Hall, and especially in terms of sound, in terms of hearing people from the audience being able to interplay with people in the ring and vice versa, and also the way that the wrestlers verbally interact with each other in the ring. And I think you lose a little bit of the magic in that. But that being said, overall, you get the experience of it. It's just... I wish they'd kind of mic that for the video so that, you know, as opposed to the hard camera that's on the stage doing it and the occasional up close camera that they intercut there. You miss a lot of it, in my opinion, watching it on video. So if you get a chance to come out here and you're a fan of these wrestlers, it's a must see. And even me, who's not the most hardcore fan of most of these guys, still a very, very fun weekend and a very fun tournament.
We start with what the DVD viewers will see first. When they first pop in this DVD, the first thing they will see is the Lucha Underground ring announcer.
Melissa Santos
appearing on just night one, though, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, just night one, Melissa Santos from Lucha Underground. And the first thing you will hear, aside from the obvious intro of One Excalibur, will be the smooth tones of Dustin, Chuck Taylor.
Yes, Chucky T. As Excalibur said, it's a Bola miracle coming in to do the color commentary. So, and he got a rousing ovation and a few applauses throughout the weekend for various things that we'll get into. But yes, Melissa Santos, everything she's advertised to be. Let's put it that way.
We start with the tournament matches. There were 6 tournament matches on night one, 6 tournament matches on night two, and then the remainder of the tournament on night three. Brian Cage, former WWE developmental talent, defeated Aerostar.
Yes.
Biff Busick, future WWE talent, defeated Andrew Everett. Will Ospreay defeated Mark Andrews, both coming from the UK. Trevor Lee defeated New Japan's Beretta. Trent in PWG, former WWE talent. Pentagon Jr. defeated Drago. Matt Sydal, formerly Evan Bourne, defeated Phoenix. Those were your tournament matches. Anything stand out from the tournament matches on day one?
Quite a bit. One of the problems here on night one where the ropes were a bit loose, so the luchadors had a really hard time. The Aerostar Brian Cage match is a bit of a mess. It wasn't everything it could have been, I think, if the ropes were a bit tighter. And it's obvious the guys weren't used to working that kind of ring. So that was a bit clunky. Overall, and the other thing, as has been mentioned elsewhere, is it was the night of reverse Ranas. Unfortunately, the only one who really hit one was in the last tournament match of the night, which was the Sydal Phoenix match, which was pretty darn amazing. The other one I really, really liked was Will Ospreay versus Mark Andrews. Both these guys were great in this match. There were a ton of reversals into high-impact spots. Andrews Ospreay might have been, if I had only gone to the first two nights, it might have been my favorite match of the night. The end of the Busick match is great as well in terms of the series of moves, because it includes Everett doing a shooting star press off the ropes into a European uppercut by Busick into a back suplex into a clothesline, which was great. And Pentagon Jr. is just a presence in person, a scary presence, especially when he's out of the ring and throwing guys into crowds and coming at you. Very, very intimidating, very scary. With the contacts and the makeup and whatnot. And he and Drago had a really, really good match for, you know, all the problems with, or possible problems with the ring. They tried to fix it after the Aerostar match. They tightened the ropes and whatnot. But overall, those were my thoughts from the tournament matches.
The non-tournament matches, Jack Evans and Angelico of AAA defeated Rich Swann, and Ricochet. Rich Swann, future WWE talent, and Ricochet.
I did not know that.
Rich Swann is last night. His last night's here in PWG, starting up with the Fed, down to NXT.
So Evans and Angelico versus the Inner City Machine Guns. Fun match. The starts out with about 10 minutes of comedy, including a breakdancing contest between Evans, Ricochet, and Rich Swann, which is a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this match. I enjoyed Evans and Angelico in this. This might have been Angelico's best match of the tournament, was this tag team match. And Jack Evans, we'll get into later, but he is a prince among men. Did you mention the other non-tournament match?
The main event. Mount Rushmore 2.0, Roderick Strong and the Young Bucks defeated Eurotrash,
which was just announced at the,
Tommy End, Zack Sabre Jr. and Marty Scurll. You have the Young Bucks and Roderick Strong winning. The story of the weekend with Mount Rushmore 2.0, aside from them just running roughshod over everybody, was questions about Super Dragon. And we might get into that in a little bit at night two, as Super Dragon finally returned in the ring on night two. But what did you think about the first night's main event, Rushmore 2.0 and Eurotrash?
My favorite match of the weekend, bar none. This match was great. I love Marty Skrull. He is phenomenal, and I'm not saying that because he spent 2 minutes sitting on my lap in the front row. Just a really, really great match. I realized something about the Bucks watching them is it's almost they do meta wrestling, which is they're pro wrestlers who are aware they are in a professional wrestling match.
Yep.
They have an homage in this match to the Undertaker Brock Lesnar SummerSlam spot where the laugh, which is highly, highly entertaining. I really like the end of this match. I'm going to spoil it here, but there was a transition here where
we're giving away results, Jeff. Event happened. We're doing a live review of the show. You can spoil everything.
Okay, good. I worry sometimes because people were complaining at other places, but it's like a 450 from Matt Jackson, which Skrull then turns into a chicken wing, which then turns into a swanton from Nick, which then eventually turns into a double Meltzer driver, which took out End and Skrull. And then there was a nice little hope spot, and I'm glad they didn't go through with it, but a 3-on-1 between Roddy, who is, again, possibly the best heel in the business right now, and the Young Bucks, where they do a double super kick with a jumping knee from Roddy, and then Roddy won with the End of Heartache. But just a great, great match from all six guys. Tommy End was great in this, too. I don't want to shade him at all, because he is a beast in the ring. But this was my first time seeing Skrull, and I love the guy. He's such a great throwback type of wrestler. And Zach was great too as a white meat babyface in this match. It just all clicked here. And of course the Young Bucks are phenomenal. So my favorite match of the three nights was this first main event.
Yeah, the Young Bucks are quite great. So that was night one. How tired were you after night one?
Night one I was okay. I pulled an all nighter. Because those who don't know, I work a weird shift. So the night ended. The thing about PWG is the bell time says something, and then it starts about an hour later.
Mm-hmm.
So
the bell time is best case scenario, really.
It's a guideline, but yeah. Show started around, I believe, 9:30, and we got out about 1:30. I got home about 2, which was about 24 hours, and then I recorded some audio that we just decided not to use, and slept all day Saturday. But I survived this one. This was fine. I was fine here.
So night one, on a scale of 1 to 10 afterwards, you would say about a 7 or 8?
How I felt
how you felt after matches. Night one, not about the matches, but how you physically felt after night one.
I'd say an 8.
All right. 8 for night one. Keep
thank
track
you for
of
thank you for caring.
I do care. I care about the health. Mm-hmm. Of my co-host.
Yes.
Night two of the Battle of Los Angeles. The tournament matches, we had Marty Skrull defeating Rich Swann, Jack Evans defeating Angelico, so tag team partners going up against each other, Chris Hero defeating Timothy Thatcher, Tommy End defeating Drew Gulak, and to combo the Drews here, we had Mike Bailey defeating Drew Galloway, formerly Drew McIntyre, and Zack Sabre Jr. defeated Ricochet. Your night two tournament matches. Jeff, thoughts?
There are three matches on the tournament that I really liked here. I really loved the Hero Thatcher match. It was a great, great brawl. Just rough stuff, almost, you know, New Japan-esque here in terms of like headbutts and forearm shivers and whatnot. Where is it? Sorry, I lost my place. The Speedball Mike Bailey Drew Galloway match over delivered. Drew Galloway was great in this match. It's just a big, you know, it's a David and Goliath match, of course.
Yeah.
And Mike Speedball Bailey is endlessly entertaining to me. But Drew Galloway really, really brought something to this match, and the ending is just great, going from that kind of even flow DDT that Drew does, I don't know the name of it, into a roll up. It was fantastic. And then What's the third match I really liked here? I liked Skrull's match a lot.
Hero and Thatcher is getting pretty good
reviews. I said
Hero
Thatcher, yeah. Okay. Tommy End. I liked Tommy End in his match. I liked him in that. I'm not a big Drew Gulak fan, per se, but Tommy End was really good in his match. The Zack Sabre Jr. versus Ricochet match.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to preface this a bit. I like what Zack Sabre Jr. does. I thought his match with Kyle O'Reilly in last year's Bola, it made my top 10. The issue I have a little bit with Zack Sabre Jr. is that you always have to kind of wrestle the Zack Sabre Jr. match with him. So if you get conflicting styles, it's always going to be you're working his style as opposed to kind of melding the two of some way. And I also have a little bit of an aesthetic acting thing with Zack Sabre Jr. in that there are two things he does during his matches. Number one, he's very, very, he plays kind of this clever, cocky baby face in that he's outsmarting people time after time after time. But the longer the match goes on, it makes it seem like he's a heel to me. And the other thing is when he's on the ground selling, I wish he'd sell a little bit more as opposed to he kind of just is taking a moment and he's not really selling. So that kind of takes me out of his matches. I liked the Zack Sabre Jr. Ricochet match. I think I was probably setting the bar a bit too high on what I was going to see in it, but he was very, very good in it. The Evans and Helico match. I've heard reports that there wasn't really a quote unquote bad match in the bunch. If there were, it was this match, mostly because it was comedy.
Really? I wouldn't have expected that.
Well, are you being sarcastic or no?
No, I wouldn't have expected. Okay. I wouldn't have expected these two guys to do comedy at this point in the show, but I guess what were they? They were the second match of the night.
So, second match of the night.
I suppose that's the spot where you would do it if you were going to do it.
Yeah. And Skrull was great in his match. I don't mean to shade him at all. Right. Marty Skrull was great in his match.
But we're talking Evans and Angelica. Why would, I don't know. I'm not as familiar with them as a tag team in Mexico. I'm familiar with Evans from all his U.S. stuff. Is there a reason why I would have been sarcastic? Are they a comedy team and I'm just unaware?
I thought you might have known more than I do a bit about what they do in AAA or about Jack Evans. Because Jack Evans was a comedy figure most of the weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I didn't. I wouldn't have guessed that, actually. Maybe I'm completely mistaken, but I wouldn't have guessed Jack Evans to be a comedy guy going into this show. So that's interesting to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd have the breakdancing night one. This one,
I expect the breakdancing.
Yeah, the actual match part, it just wasn't clicking. They start out with the tag team partners who didn't want to fight each other necessarily, but Evans cuts this great promo on the audience, making us heel on him. During the course of the match, he grabs a drink. And then he does drunken master working, which really popped the crowd. But, you know, it's a comedy spot. And then all you have to know is he won with a Karate Kid style crane kick for the pin.
Okay.
So it was pretty much a comedy match. But even during the course of the match, they weren't clicking with each other in terms of their moves. And you know what? I can excuse that, number one, because the entire weekend was great. Number two, they probably don't work against each other all that much. So, of course, it's going to be. But I think I was expecting. I think, this is one of those where I set the bar a little bit too high in terms of what I want to see. I'm not a regular watcher of, say, Lucha Underground. But, you know, I had heard all this about him, and I really wanted to see Angelico do a lot more, I think, over the course of the weekend, and I think I was a bit disappointed by this match.
The Karate Crane Kick, of course, because Karate Kid was filmed and takes place in Reseda.
Yeah, and you'd think that a guy with a Karate Kid gimmick in a tournament in Reseda. but no, Mike Speedball Bailey and Drew Galloway was really overperformed.
I'm really looking forward to seeing...
I love that match.
I'm looking forward to see the Drew Galloway and everything match. Everything that Drew Galloway was involved with, I'm interested in seeing.
We'll
because
get to
Galloway,
that on night three. Yeah, night three, he was fantastic. Yeah,
and we'll talk about night three here, but I just think like Drew McIntyre was severely underused in WWE, and this is a guy that really should be writing his own ticket in wrestling because he's got the size, he's got the look. He is
big. I mean,
he's a big dude. People don't understand.
I was front row and he walked by, and I'm 5'10", 5'11". He's at least 6'5", 6'6".
He's a very tall guy who looked really tall on WWE TV. I think the problem was he was a little skinnier than some other guys kind of look. But yeah, I mean, the guy's got size. And on the indie scene, it's even more prevalent because he's just bigger than everybody.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
And I feel bad, you know, Chris Hero.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm shading him, but he was absolutely fantastic in that match with Thatcher. And Thatcher has the best mean guy face in the business.
It's funny because you think you're shading because you're not praising everyone. I mean, there's 24 right. guys who are all awesome.
Yeah. And that's the thing is it's just, you know, if I don't get to someone and tell you I love them, it's because there's just so much. It's like a buffet and you even feel like a buffet afterwards. It's like, man, that was a lot of wrestling.
I know. I love every single guy in this tournament except Mike Bailey. We go to the non-tournament matches.
I'm the same way about Zack Sabre, so we'll continue.
Phoenix and Aerostar taking on Pentagon Jr. and Drago. Phoenix and Aerostar got the win, and your main event was a Guerrilla Warfare weapons match. Mount Rushmore 2.0, Super Dragon, and the Young Bucks defeating Biff Busick, Andrew Everett, and Trevor Lee. I assume this was madness. I assume it was crazy. A lot of people talking about Super Dragon possibly suffering an injury.
That wasn't until night three.
Oh, the Super Dragon injury was night three. Okay, we'll get night to that three. Then. Well, as for the craziness of this match, Jeff, take it away.
Oh, you have no idea. Because you are in a crowded, small building, and guys are shoving people in the crowd to get to weapons and your chair, and throwing guys into the crowd, and Super Dragon just doesn't care. And that dude is intimidating in person. Trust me on this. It was all the madness you could imagine. There is a true sense of dread in the audience during a guerrilla warfare match involving the Super Dragon, involving the Super Bucks, involving Super Dragon, involving Trevor Lee, who's a madman, Andrew Everett's a madman diving all over the place. It was something, man. It has to be experienced to be believed. And then in the aftermath, of course, Excalibur and Chris Hero both get beaten down by the three members of Mount Rushmore 2.0 that were there that night, because Roddy Strong had flown out for a show in Georgia.
Yeah, he was in Ring of Honor on Saturday.
Yeah, and so they were working. They Excalibur, you know, bids us goodnight, and then Dragon and the Bucks come out and beat on him a bit, and, you know, put him through a chair. And of course, there's the shoes with thumbtacks came into play.
Of course.
Those are we're up close. Those are interesting.
Were you at the guerrilla warfare match between the Bucks and Candice LeRae and Joey? PWG 11 last year.
I think no. I watched it though. Okay. I don't believe I was. I might have been. I can't. It's all a blur.
Well, that'll be the part that I'm looking forward to see exactly how crazy compared to that match. Because we had Guerrilla Warfare, we had Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong, which was somewhat crazy, but it wasn't a mess. I mean, when you get these multi-man, you know, weapons matches inside that small building, and add in Super Dragon going nuts,
yeah,
I can only imagine how crazy it was.
The thing that differentiates this from the Candice LeRae Joey Ryan match was there was no blood in it at all.
Oh wow!
Which is shocking for the amount of thumbtacks and stuff that you saw.
It is a little shocking.
And Busick's a great brawler too. He's the one guy I haven't mentioned yet in this whole thing. He was going nuts as well. Everybody was just going insane in this match. And then the Lucha Tag, great tag match. And and they all work with one another, so you'd expect nothing less. And Pentagon just chopped the hell out of people. And this whole weekend was a night of chops. Busick can chop the crap out of people. Hero chops the crap out of people. And Pentagon Jr. chops the crap out of people. I mean, it rings, and it just sounds like it hurts.
Probably craps the chops out of people, too.
Yes, and Tommy End as well.
Yep.
Man.
All right, so after night two, on the Jeff Hawkins health scale, 1 to 10, we had night 8 for night 1. Or, excuse me, an 8 for night 1. How about on night 2?
I was a little lower because I was a 6, but in retrospect, that's also because I only got 4 hours of sleep because we got out at 1 and I had to be up at 5 to go volunteer at my place of worship on Sunday. So I was dragging going into day 3.
All right, so an 8 after night 1, a 6 after night 2. I'm sensing a trend. We'll see here.
Yeah.
I'm sensing it. Night 3, the Battle of Los Angeles. So we got done with the prelim matches. We're into the true tournament now.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Evans defeated Brian Cage. Chris Hero defeated Biff Busick. Marty Scurll defeated Trevor Lee. Zack Sabre Jr. defeated Pentagon Jr. I know when that match started heating up on Twitter, like that was actually happening, there were a lot of people going nuts about Zack Sabre and Pentagon Jr. So I can only imagine how it was in the building, and we'll get your take on that. Mike Bailey defeated Tommy End. Will Ospreay defeated Matt Sydal in the first round of this night. I want to get your thoughts on those matches. Any surprises with the results when you first saw these matches take place? Because I understand there are no brackets, correct? Like, you don't know what matches are happening on day three.
Right, you don't.
It's yeah, so you go in, you're just looking for the entrance music, you're seeing the guys come in and be like, oh shit. And after every match starts happening, you're like, okay, who's left, who can be paired up with each other? So I know when Mike Bailey and Tommy End came out, people were all like hyped for Will Ospreay and Matt Sydal, because that's a match that happened overseas that a lot of people were hoping would come here this weekend. But your takeaway from what was officially the second round of the tournament, the opening of this night?
Some great, great, great matches here. The Ospreay Sydal match was phenomenal. The Speedball Mike Bailey Tommy End match was another great David and Goliath fight, man. And there's something about Bailey when he's getting fired up that gets everybody excited, and it was pretty darn awesome. Skrull Trevor Lee was solid, and Marty Skrull just continued to grow on me. I found the Zack Sabre Pentagon Jr. match for the internet hype, and of course the hype of, you know, these two big time personalities. It was Pentagon doing a Zack Sabre Jr. match, and it was still good and fun. I expected a little bit more, but you know, Pentagon, of course, just beat the heck out of Zack Sabre Jr.'s chest. I enjoyed that match. Chris Hero and Busick was another great brawl, and ended with a middle rope pile driver, which is awesome for me, mostly, you know, from a fantasy wrestling perspective. That was always my finishing maneuver. I'd never seen it live other than Terry Funk doing one, so that was kind of cool. And then the first match out, man, Jack Evans and Brian Cage. And Jack Evans comes out to this odd music, and he gets on the mic and he tears down everybody in the house, and he tears down Brian Cage as a weightlifting bodybuilding geek. And of course he gets destroyed by Brian Cage for about 90% of the match, like a rag doll getting thrown all over the place. And it starts out with the end of the Aerostar Cage match, where he catches him in a suplex, and then Evan slides down and gets a schoolboy pin on him. 1, 2, 3. And the place just erupts because nobody was expecting him to win that match. And then Cage destroys him after the match, and he has to be helped to the back. But just an amazing mouth and a fun, you know, it's that kind of match where you watch and you realize you enjoy it, but it's not going to get, you know, it's not going to get a high star rating from anybody. It's what I like to call the Toru Yano match in a tournament. Guy gets destroyed for 90%, and the mid-card mouthy dick heel gets a roll up for the win. It was great. I loved it.
And so this is where apparently, and you'll let us kind of know what happened with the whole Super Dragons thing, but we finally had Mount Rushmore 2.0 intact in a match in PWG. All four members, Roderick Strong, Super Dragon, and the Young Bucks, defeating Angelico, Phoenix, Rich Swann, and Ricochet. So we basically, I mean, we had the full team here. What happened with Super Dragon?
Well, from the looks of it, yeah, it was weird because they set this up because Excalibur said he had four guys in the locker, or he had a whole locker room full of guys he could get. And it started out with, I guess, the Bucks came out to, or Roddy came out to Phoenix's music, and then Phoenix, after 2.0 was out there, Phoenix came out to fight, and then the NRC Machine Guns, followed by Angelico, or vice versa, or whatnot. And then, you know, it kind of goes and devolves into the, you know, the crazy dives and the athletic stuff. And at some point, I forget who was in the corner, but Super Dragon goes running at the turnbuckle and does the dive, misses the guy and ends up diving through the center rope, through the turnbuckle to the floor. And it was reported that he tore his ACL, but it seemed like he had a concussion. We didn't see him for the rest of the night. The match, you know, continued for a very short time, and then Strong won with the end of Heartache. But for the posing in the match, Super Dragon was nowhere to be found at that point and was gone. But it looks like that was the move that really that took him out.
So after all this, and after getting win after win after win at PWG Bola, Mount Rushmore 2.0 could already be over.
It could be, but then, you know, you might get a replacement of some kind.
Maybe get a replacement, but then, yeah, sell new shirts. Sell new shirts with the new face on the front there. Why not?
Hero, maybe, since he's a mainstay and a big guy. Heck, put Zach, I'd like to see a heel Zack Sabre Jr. run.
Why not? Zack Sabre Jr., the news coming out of this. Actually, we'll do that when we get to the final. So we had our semifinals here. Chris Hero defeating Jack Evans, Mike Bailey defeating Will Ospreay, and Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Marty Scurll. So the final was going to be Hero versus Bailey versus Sabre. And Chris Hero on, I can't remember if it was Tremendous or if it was Mystery Vortex, but Chris Hero just had that huge match with Mike Bailey that Mike Bailey got a squeaker win from. So did they play off of that one when we get to the final here is what I'll want to know. In fact, let's talk about the final. There's one more match where we're going to get to, the 10-man that was in between.
I want to talk about on the lead up to that because those matches.
Talk about them.
Two of the three were great. Hero and Evans.
Yeah. Let me guess the one you say isn't great, the Zack Sabre Jr. match. You are burying Zack Sabre all over the place.
I am not burying him. I just think there were some choices made that could have been better, I think. And I've already admitted, I'm not the biggest Zack Sabre Jr. fan in the world. I like what he does, and what he does phenomenal.
All right, Hero and Evans.
Hero and Evans was fantastic. Jack Evans comes out, bandaged head, bandaged ribs, just bandages all over the place. Again, cuts a heel promo on us, cuts a heel promo on Hero. and then the match starts and he grabs the mic again and he goes, "You know what? I'm even better than all of you give me credit for. Not only can this guy not get a 3 count on me, he can't get a 2 count on me." So the entire story of the match was Jack Evans getting destroyed for a long, long time, and always kicking out at one. and you know what? It started out as a gimmick, and eventually the crowd got into it, and they just loved it and ate it up with a spoon.
And it helps because after, I mean, 3 or 2.5 days of shows, all with the same people too, no matter how great these people are, you got to have something different to keep people into it. Like, this match was, of course, to find out who goes to the final. So, of course, people were going to be interested. But that's a cool little thing. And it wouldn't shock me if that was Chris Hero's idea. Chris Hero always likes thinking of creative things like this. Wouldn't shock me if it was Jack Evans' idea, because he's probably done it in places before. But these two guys who have been around the indie scene for a long, long time know how to keep fans' interest, especially after long days of action.
I think it was just playing into the story establishing the cage match of the mid-card heel who has no business getting to the finals, having a bit of hope of getting to the finals.
Yeah.
And played into that. The
Ospreay Mike Bailey.
Oh, God, this was great. This is probably my favorite match of the tournament, or, you know, it's one of them. It's up there. They were great. My question was, when Ospreay came to the ring, he jumped into the ring, and then he started selling a knee. Now, I'm not sure if that was legit or not. I'd like to find that out. because it played into quite a bit of the match, and he sold it for the entirety of the match. And it seemed innocuous when he kind of did a rope dive into the ring, and then he just started like grabbing his knee occasionally. So, but he also did a whole ton of aerobatic spots. Will Ospreay was great throughout all three nights. I just want to know if even despite the knee injury, he was still doing the number of spots he was doing. A couple of scary. Mike Bailey does these apron bumps that are going to shorten his life if he's not careful. But that was a fun match. And my problem with the Zack Sabre Jr. Marty Scurll match was that it was just too long. It was 25, 26 minutes long. And even up until about 20 minutes, they're still kind of doing comedy with the audience. And it was mostly chicken wing to armbar reversal. Chicken wing to armbar reversal. I've heard it's a style. It might have been a World of Sport style match, which is fine. But it was a little cutesy for my taste. And it was a little long given the fact that, yeah, most of us had been out there since either noon or 1 o'clock. And we're about, 4.5 hours into the card right now. It was just too long for a semifinal match to be 26 minutes of this variety of reversals of, wrist locks and things.
Yeah, I know.
So it dragged.
Following it along on Twitter, people were, questioning whether those sending tweets out, lost internet service or something, because it was 25 minutes in between updates. So everyone's wondering, there's no way they could be going this long in a semifinal after all these matches. But no, we indeed found out it was so.
And Rob, I am not burying Zack Sabre Jr.
That's fine.
He's not my style of guy to watch.
How late did night three start? Because it seems like there was an advertised bell time and people weren't even coming into the building at the advertised bell time.
No, it wasn't. We started, the advertised bell time was 5. I had gotten there at noon because I was general admission that night.
Uh-huh.
And it started around 6:30, 6:45.
Okay, so you were in line for 5 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Did you get an okay seat?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Me and a friend of a mutual friend of ours, Eric Barnes, passed the time in line.
Oh, cool.
Nesbar on the board.
Good, good, good. We'll get to the final. We'll do this 10-man tag because this 10-man, it started out as an 8-man tag.
Yes, it did.
Trent Beretta, Aerostar, Drew Galloway, and Drew Gulak going up against Timothy Thatcher, Drago, Mark Andrews, and Andrew Everett, but it would not stay as an 8-man because we had two somewhat mystery partners, one join each team. Chuck Taylor joining his buddy Trent, and Tommaso Ciampa joining the team led by Timothy Thatcher. So this became a 10-man with what I understand to be another long slow-motion spot, possibly the last in the PWG career of Chuck Taylor.
Yes, a very, very long one. Slow motion chants, slow motion ball shots. A lot of meta wrestling comedy here. A point where Andrew Everett and Mark Andrews are both on the top rope after a long time of the slow motion stuff, and they just both went, "We can't really do slow motion from this point," which, of course, got a big laugh. Lots of aerial dives outside. Including Drew Galloway doing a tope over the top rope, which was insane given his size. But no, he ran and did it, and it was awesome. And the downside of it was it killed the crowd for the final, because the crowd loved this match because it was all about,
it was fun.
It goes to the self-referentialness of what they like. The teams were just so mishmash, but still, even when guys had to work certain styles with other guys they weren't used to, it was still a lot of fun. This is a comedy match. It's a fun comedy match. It's going to go great on the DVD, and people are going to love it. And people loved it. People were clamoring for Chuck Taylor to enter this match, and he, ripped off his shirt to the cheers of thousands. And the name of their team was either 5-Man Band, which Galloway just broke when they said they were going to say that, or Best Amigos. So, fun match.
And the main event, the final, 5 hours into the show,
Yes.
Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Chris Hero and Mike Bailey. This was an elimination match. So who was eliminated first?
Speedball.
And who eliminated him?
Hero.
So Hero got his win back, per se.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible, do you think, after watching this match, that Chris Hero and Mike Bailey might have another confrontation down the line?
Yes.
Okay.
And it'll be awesome because, I mean, well, the story of the tournament was him doing the David versus Goliath matches.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And so to end up in a David versus Goliath rematch after Hero cost him the title, yeah, I could totally
But
see
it's
that.
Interesting, though, because it's David versus Goliath, but David already beat Goliath.
Yeah, but, you know, we'll see. I couldn't tell you for sure. It was an earned win, let's put it that way, as opposed to, say, a cheap win of
sure.
some kind.
Absolutely. So Zack Sabre gets the win here. He taps
yes.
out Chris Hero to get
yes.
the win. And Zack Sabre Jr. makes an announcement after the match.
Yes.
And what was that announcement, Jeff?
That they're all going to go drinking?
Zack Sabre said he's moving to California.
That's what, yes.
And will be based in the United States, so he is no longer an English wrestler.
Forget about that part of it.
Yes, a pretty big part, because he's going to California, which is a weird spot when you're based out of Cali.
But I didn't know if it was true or if he was just saying he liked it so much here he was going to move here. You know, that kind of thing?
Okay, yeah, so he may not actually be moving there. So,
yeah, I don't know if he's actually moving or not. It seems like the kind of thing where you say it to get the pop from the crowd rather than an actual, you know, news flash. I'll believe it when I see it. I'd love for him to move out here. It'd be great out here. But, this one, it had, you know, we're already 5 hours in, and it starts out with a little bit of comedy with Hero going to watch the match on the outside and sit on someone's lap, and then, you know, Bailey follows suit, and then – or not Bailey, but, you know, Zack Sabre follows suit, and then Bailey goes sits on Rick Knox's knee, you know, and then it goes into various chain wrestling with two guys getting moves on Hero and vice versa, like a giant game of Twister for about 10 minutes. So it started out a little slow, and the crowd was – exhausted and there was very I mean they tried to bring some life to it, but just it may come off bad on the DVD. Still a fun match to watch, a lot of reversals, you know. It was all three guys wrestling a Zack Sabre Jr. match.
So Zack Sabre gets the win. He is your PWG Battle of Los Angeles
yeah.
champion, so a championship match comes his way
mm-hmm.
in the future. So we'll find out what's going on with Zack Sabre Jr. there. What do you think the odds are that Zack Sabre will become the PWG champion in his first title challenge?
It's his second title challenge. I went to the first
No, one. I mean his first one post-Bola.
Oh, first one.
Like it's not going to be, I don't see Zack Sabre getting a title challenge. He fails. And then a second one. I want the first
oh.
challenge after Bola here. Does
okay,
he win? Does he lose?
Yes, he wins.
He wins.
There's no question about it. Because the story is, lost the first match against
yeah.
Roddy, loses the match on night one to Roddy and Bola night one.
Mm-hmm.
He takes the fall. Night two, he beats the 2014 winner of Bola, Ricochet. Night three, he overcomes, you know, favorites and scrappy underdogs to win it all. He's winning the title,
especially if he
moves to California.
Especially if he's moving. Now, I was looking
yeah.
up flights because, of course, Zack Sabre Jr. is a regular in Pro Wrestling NOAH. So
yes.
he makes quite the, few trips to Japan all the time. Flights from London to Tokyo are 11 and a half hours and a little bit more expensive than the same 11 and a half hour flight from Los Angeles to Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not losing any time, and it might be a little bit cheaper. The problem, though, is if Zack Sabre's looking to pick up all those Evolve bookings, I don't know if he gets as many
right.
as he had, if he's picking up, you know, East Coast dates in the U.S. So he very well may have just been saying that he might move there because he likes it so much. It was a warm. I mean, did they break 100 degrees in Los Angeles this weekend?
Yeah.
All right. Every day?
And yeah, I would say so, yes.
So your health now, we get the health. We were in an 8 after night 1. We were a 6 after night 2. After night 3, post-show, when that final bell rang and the show was over, Jeff Hawkins, on a scale of 1 to 10, where were you?
We were at a 2. It was midnight.
So Battle of Los Angeles is not even, it's not wearing down just the wrestlers. It's wearing down the fans also.
Well, you know, I mean, and you know, a couple people I saw taking a bit of a doze in the crowd or during intermission. No, but post win when he had the trophy and Roddy came out and whatever, all the British wrestlers came out to celebrate with Zack. So that was cool. So you had Galloway and Skrull and Ospreay and Mark Andrews and Tommy End. Well, Tommy End's from Holland, but he came out, I believe, as well. But all the European wrestlers came out to celebrate as a kind of a victory for Europe. So that was a cool little moment as well.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting.
Why?
I don't know. Just is.
I thought you were setting me up for something.
Team. Well, what I was trying to do is take all the last names of the Europeans who came out to celebrate with Sabre to give them a WWE team name.
No.
And what I've come up with is So Ages. Team So Ages.
Drew Galloway looked like he had... I was shocked he was there for the last night. I thought he was one of these one-night guys.
Yeah,
usually those guys are like AJ Styles, but usually they're only there on Friday and they fly out on Saturday. And so it was very cool to see him, and he looked like he had a blast both nights. So that was nice to see.
Yeah, Drew Galloway getting the... So he wasn't there... Was he in a match on Friday?
No. Right, and so he wasn't meeting with... I don't think he had, like... He wasn't like everybody else and selling his wares and stuff and outside kind of hobnobbing with guys. So he was kind of a special attraction type thing.
Yeah. He is a special attraction. I think Drew Galloway hasn't lost any luster since getting fired for WWE. It's been a year too. You would think sometimes after a year, they kind of lose it, but Galloway is kind of, he's acclimated himself to the indie scene. People are starting to see him as a big indie name.
Yeah, and not to get into who's in the crowd and whatnot, but
just a
wrestling one, not a celebrity one or anything like that. But night one, it was really cool that Human Tornado was in the crowd because he's an old school PWG guy and from when I used to go. So it was nice to see him out.
Human Torpedo, Rey Mysterio, Conan, all in the building for various times.
Mm-hmm.
And the Battle of Los Angeles. So overall, your experience on a scale of 1 to 10, Jeff, where'd you rate this year's Bola?
Oh, at least a 9. High 8, 9. Nice. Yeah.
So
I enjoyed myself. I enjoy wrestling. I just, you know, when I talk about it, I want to be fair. I don't want to be, oh, this was awesome. Oh, this was, you know, I want to be, you know, even-handed in terms of things, of things I enjoyed and things I didn't enjoy. I'm not going to, I wouldn't go so far as to say, yes, it was better than WrestleMania. But it was pretty darn fun. I had a blast.
So our show is available on voicesofwrestling.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and so on. Oftentimes on previous shows for the last month or two, you've heard that we're on YouTube also. Mm. You're on youtube.com/voicesofwrestling. Well, we haven't been posting the full audio shows for the last couple of weeks because, as you may be aware of, if you've listened to shows around a month ago, New Japan Pro Wrestling, when I was doing the New Japan G1 daily video recaps, they filed a DMCA takedown notice.
Yes, the Yakuza was coming after you.
A copyright act was placed against me, and our YouTube channel was given two strikes of a possible three, meaning we could no longer upload videos of longer than 15 minutes, meaning we had a lot of different restrictions placed on the YouTube channel. So that was all going around a month ago.
Okay.
Immediately following, I placed a counter notification countering New Japan's claim and trying to get the videos back up on the YouTube page and try to get those restrictions taken away.
Now help me here. What is the basis of your counterclaim?
The basis of my counterclaim was I don't think New Japan is going to sue me.
Okay.
And I had somewhat of a basis for fair use. It could have been argued. I don't know if I would have won, but it could have been argued.
All right.
And we had also contacted New Japan. They have, when they file a claim like that, YouTube gets you their email. So you can email back and forth. And I emailed the email address that YouTube had for him and told him, okay, well, can you retract these? If not, I'll fire, we can file a counterclaim. I believe they're fair use, blah, blah, blah. I will remove the videos regardless. And I put out of respect, hoping that respect would come into this. that would remove the videos, even if you retracted it. I didn't need the videos up. And plus, by this time, by the way, the G1 was over when we started this, you know,
so you're working them. You're working them.
Well, no, I mean, kind of, you know, I mean, let's face it. You know, I got to get these restrictions off of me, and I don't want them because they would have lasted for a year.
Break these chains.
I would have had to break that, and I didn't want these restrictions on me. So I emailed them. We get a little response that kind of read like either the email wasn't translated well, if it was in fact someone who did not speak English replying, or it was an automated type message that they just sent out. And without going into details on the entire message, basically what I got out of it is they weren't going to retract, but they weren't going to go further.
Okay.
So with them saying they weren't going to go further, not acknowledging the fact that I said I would take them down. I don't even know if they, you know, they meant maybe that they weren't going to go further as far as talking to me. Like they weren't going to, you know, take my emails into account, and they actually could have gone further as far as, you know, stopping me from uploading the videos. I'm not exactly sure. So what I did after I got that email response, and it was the only email response I ever got, I filed the counter notification on every video that was striked, put the reasoning why. After a week, YouTube accepted the counterclaim, because you have to put in a reason why you're countering, and YouTube before it even goes to the claimant, YouTube has to acknowledge that that's a valuable claim and approve the counterclaim. So YouTube did that. It goes to New Japan. I have to wait 14 business days. They have 14 business days to either sue me in U.S. federal court, which would have required New Japan lawyers or Bushiroad lawyers to travel to Hammond, Indiana to file a claim.
I want to see that.
I thought the likelihood of that happening was not very, you know, optimistic. I felt like that was not going to happen, especially for a small claim like this. After doing a lot of research, after doing a lot of, you know, people who have filed DMCA claims and all this stuff and had them filed against them, I thought that was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Although I did get a little scared when I realized as I was doing this that, oh, you know what? New Japan's coming to the U.S. Like, I made this a little bit easier for them. But they got offices in California, so I didn't think they were going
to
come from there.
Have you met my friend Minoru Suzuki? He's here to talk to you about your video.
I was making sure that I was always walking in public places with another person. I was not going to get clipped. So 14 days go by, and about 3 days ago, got the email from YouTube saying that the takedown notice has been taken or retracted, if you will, or that it's no longer in effect, and YouTube was restoring the videos and removing all of the strikes against the account. So in a way, we won.
Woohoo! USA! USA!
I did stand by it, because the G1 now is a month over, and we did the final G1 review that basically gave the standings and everything from the entire tournament. So, like, I am going to honor what I was going to originally intend to do. I did delete manually all of the previous G1 recap videos. I kept up the final night. I kept up the audio that Rich and Joe and I did of the midway point. I kept up the preview. But I removed each daily video at my own doing. We were not forced to remove them after all. So I removed those. Our account's in good standing. We can upload the shows again. And all this happened, too, when I was trying to upload our post show that we recorded from last week. Right. So that post show never did go up because there was a lot of account stuff going on. By now, it's a little too late because most of the post show was spent previewing Bola. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to do that. We'll do a post show that will be up on the YouTube page on Thursday. So this episode's post show will be up on Thursday with Jeff and I discussing different things after recording this episode. So youtube.com/voices of wrestling. The account is back to normal. Mm-hmm. We fought the law and we won.
What does this mean for the future of other videos, Rob?
So, well, basically it means that the future is open. We can go back to plans. Like Rich was doing with one of his friends, the Let's Play, the little squashing buttons series.
Yeah.
At the Voices of Wrestling website. And he was all, I'm going to, you know, take you behind the curtain a little bit. Rich was pissed at me.
Really?
I think so.
Rich does not seem like a man who would get pissed.
He didn't get pissed, but I can tell with what he was saying early on when he saw the takedown note, because he saw it the day after I did. So okay. I knew we just got taken down. He saw it the day after. And, you know, he was saying some different things, and he was upset because what he was going to do with the Let's Play videos that you can go see at our YouTube channel, where he and his buddy play WrestleMania 2000, the video game, a very fun game from Nintendo 64. But he had recorded those videos in about 25 to 30 minute time frames. So each video was going to be about a half an hour. Right. So when this DMCA takedown notice came about, we couldn't upload those videos.
Mm.
They had to be clipped into under 15 minutes. So that was not settling. And I was upset too, let's be real. But I was kind of taking the approach like, I can fix this. You know, it was, and really, it was something we thought might happen before we even started the videos. We were just hoping it didn't. But it did. But we fought him. We got him put back up. So, you know, we're happy again now. We're happy again now.
Hold on, let me write something down. Let's see. Rich and Rob have heat. Use for later. Okay, good. Yeah, let's continue.
You keep that, in mind.
I have an enemies list. No, I don't.
If we're not doing Shake Them Ropes next week, it's because kayfabe, which is a legitimate word in the Oxford Dictionary now,
yes,
has been broken.
Top 50, or top 100, sorry.
Not yet.
Not yet?
In fact, the top 100 match is going to happen next week. We don't have time for it.
You made me watch it.
I watched it too. We just don't have time for it now. Because we talked 50 minutes of Bola, 10 minutes of YouTube. We still got Samoa Joe to talk about. What else do we got to talk about? What did I write down here for night two? We got YouTube out of the way.
Okay.
We got Bola out of the way. I wrote down Raw. Was there anything big from Raw we need to discuss outside of the fact that Charlotte is the number one contender for the Divas Championship coming at Night of Champions, and Seth Rollins is indeed wrestling twice on the show?
You want nitpicky stuff or just big
stuff?
I don't want
nitpicky stuff. I want thoughts on the big angles. I want thoughts on Seth Rollins is wrestling John Cena and Sting in separate matches for the U.S. and world title.
He's the guy to do it if you're going to do it.
And we got...
Yeah, that's great.
Were you surprised at all that Charlotte is indeed getting the singles match after weeks and weeks of seemingly Becky being the one they were focusing on?
Oh, let me backtrack real quick on the Sting thing.
No, stop backtracking. When I move on, you move on. Let's go. Charlotte, the Divas Championship.
Yes, especially in the way they did the Beat the Clock match. The problem is, with the Nikki Bella clock, that sets up either a return or a debut or a surprise, and you can't do that with Sasha. Charlotte has to lose this match at Night of Champions, right? She has to lose it.
So
Nikki can get the record.
No. She's going to get the record anyway.
Okay.
Her record comes before Night of Champions.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yes. Her record would have to be broken on Raw. Now, this is where they might build some more tension between Team PCB if somehow Becky or Paige gets a championship match on a Raw, like swindle their way into a Raw championship match, and they win, and then a member of Team PCB faces Charlotte for the title at Night of Champions. I don't know if that'll happen, but yeah, Nikki's getting the record unless she loses the title on the Raw before Night of Champions. In fact, two Raws before Night of Champions.
Huh. See, because I think, you know, the first thing I thought when I saw the giant clock is that none of these women involved in this angle are going to be taking the belt off of Nikki. I think it, you know, and I don't know why, but I think it might be Natalya who will then give it to one of the people who were brought up. That's just my thinking.
Could be. I mean, you're debuting this clock, but unless there's some type of, unless they're just going to celebrate it. What was the clock? 14 days?
Yeah.
So, I mean, in two Raws, they can celebrate it, and maybe that's the heat angle.
Okay.
Where they beat down Nikki or they do something to ruin the celebration, and then you have the heat going into the actual pay-per-view. I don't know. So the actual record may be a foregone conclusion that she's getting it.
Yeah.
We just got to see if she can lose it right after getting the record.
And I just think it was a bad idea to do a beat the clock with women who had complained about only having 3-minute matches, and then the top match in there is 3 minutes. That's a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, at least in this, I mean, they're complaining not just about matches, but time. In storyline, they're not really complaining about match time, because in theory, you would want to win as fast as possible.
Right.
Like in storyline, you're not going to go out there and say, I want 15-minute matches, because you don't control how long the match goes. You either win or lose when you win or lose. But in theory, behind the scenes, of course, they want more time. So they got short time. It plays into the beat the clock. I don't mind the way they did it. I kind of like the way that they actually did, like the fact that Paige was the last match and she didn't beat Charlotte's time.
That was fine. I was perfectly fine with that.
Because I think that builds even more tension. Now, what I would like them to do is in these beat the clock matches, you know, finish the match.
Yes.
It shouldn't be an easy way out to, you know, because they put Sasha Banks in there and...
And she didn't need to be in there, to be honest with you.
Right.
I don't think she needed to be there, especially, I mean...
It's so funny.
But again, that depends on who they're going to the belt to. If they're going to give it to Sasha, if she's the girl,
it's
then...
It's so funny with Sasha because she hurt herself at TakeOver.
During the reverse runner,
she
said she was okay.
Right. But she wasn't. They had her wrestle a minute on Sunday and not at all on Monday. And then they've kept her quiet for most of the weekend on live events. And on TV, she's not been wrestling that much. Now, she's okay to the point where she can get in the ring. They haven't kept her out of the ring. But they're trying to take it easy on her. So some of these complaints may not have been valid that we've had about how Sasha didn't do much. They're trying to take it easy on her so she doesn't further injure herself, even though she's okay. They're just giving her time to breathe. Because honestly, right now, she doesn't have to be doing long matches. Someone does, but it doesn't have to be Sasha.
Mm. Nope, and you know, the only other angle kind of progression here, they're going to have to tread lightly on this Dolph Ziggler thing with the sexual harassment implications and... whatnot, given our society, that's just weird.
There was just some weird stuff on this show, and they keep going weird with Dolph Ziggler and Summer Rae.
You know what? I was pleasantly surprised by the Becky Lynch inset promo. I mean, for what they do on PG, I was so afraid they're going to go into the puns and weirdness. You know, cyborg thing. I thought that kind of helped her quite a bit, as opposed to, say, the Flair inset promo, which did nothing for her.
So when do you think they're going to do Triple H and Seth? Do you think it happens as early as Survivor Series, or do they hold it off to WrestleMania? A serious question, because they're doing that match.
No, I know they are, and I hated everything about that, but I think they're probably going to do it for Survivor Series.
Because that's pretty quick, and I could see that may be the case. And you would think Triple H would maybe have, like, Seth Rollins to me seems still like a kind of small match for Triple H to have at a WrestleMania, but maybe they would want to change the perception.
Yeah.
Maybe they want to change the perception of Seth Rollins and have Triple H versus Seth Rollins at the biggest WrestleMania of all time. I don't know, but Survivor Series seems kind of likely. Maybe Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Survivor Series, and I think probably Seth is going to find a way to weasel a win.
Survivor Series this year also is happening in Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Sting sticks around and is one of the main participants in a match at the Atlanta Survivor Series?
You know what? This could be setting up a rematch for Survivor Series and then put off the Hunter match for a Rumble, like you were saying.
Maybe. Yeah. There's a lot of, there are options.
Sting would still be a draw in Atlanta, I think.
I don't know. I don't know if he would be
any
more
than
normal, but
it might be too much time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a long time since, you know, Atlanta. I don't know if Ric Flair is an extra draw in North Carolina anymore.
No, probably not.
Yeah. So we'll see about that one. Now, have you ever played this WWE Supercard game?
No.
This app?
No.
I'm interested, if any of you out there are listening to the show and have ever played Supercard, hit us up on Twitter at ShakeThemRopes. rob@voicesofwrestling.com is the email if you would rather go private. I just downloaded this game when they announced the new cards and the new season. Like, 2K makes this game, and it comes out, and they...
Because of the Stephanie card?
Well, no. I'm not... This isn't a Stephanie thing. This is just the game. So I downloaded. I'm interested because it's been a year. It's been out for at least a year. And people talk about it, and I see every once in a while, on occasion, a Twitter post about what card they got on Supercard or something like that. So I finally downloaded it just out of curiosity to see what it was all about.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stop playing this game. Like, I have a problem. Like, I'm not a gamer. I don't own a game
system. So this is your Magic the Gathering.
See, I never played Magic the Gathering. It was too complicated for me because I'm dumb. I played Pokemon.
Wait, make that a drop.
I played Pokemon in school when there was a big Pokemon phase. I was like in seventh grade, and like sixth grade was the yo-yo phase in our school, and seventh grade was the Pokemon phase, and then eighth grade was the, okay, let's stop doing stupid kiddie shit phase.
Okay.
But I was playing Pokemon. Never Magic, but it's kind of like that. You get these cards, you play against others. It's very quick. You don't have to think
It's like war.
Yeah. But I can see, like, there are, you could play this game, and like most successful games now, the game itself is free, and you convince people they have to pay for in-app purchases to get themselves better because you want to be competitive. You want to be better.
Yes.
And there's a definite advantage if you do pay for stuff to get cards to get better. And I won't ever pay for anything in this app. I'm not that addicted
anymore.
But I want to know. No, ever. Like, I'll play this game. Like, I'm in one of these King of the Ring gimmicks right now, and it's going to end like at 7:30, which is 20 minutes from now. And I'm like, I have to get the show over before this thing ends. Not really.
That's why we're not doing the top 100, man.
No, we're not doing it because I have a fantasy football draft at 8.
You are such a dork.
I have a fantasy football draft at 8, and I couldn't tell you, I couldn't like name everyone who would go in the first round. Like, I don't know anything about football this year. I'm going to have to go on who was good last year because I don't know who's going to be good this year. I don't know anything about the rookies. I don't know. Is Adrian Peterson playing? I guess I'll pick him first. I don't know.
Oh, no, don't pick him first. And also don't, well, Jordy Nelson's out for the year. Just know that much.
Jordy Nelson's out for the year. Randall Cobb might play in week one. And I mean, I don't know who the quarterbacks that are going to be good, so I'll probably go safe and just pick Tom Brady. And hope he doesn't get suspended.
Oh.
I don't know. I have a fantasy football draft, though, but like, I am complete nerddom.
Well, then we should wrap up the show
this week. So it's insane, like fantasy football in this card game. But I want to know if anyone's playing the card game out there. So tweet at us. You can call me a dork, whatever.
Tweet at him. I don't play this card game.
Tweet at me if you have tips, if you want to be helpful, or if you just want to troll, just tweet at me. And then I wanted to ask you this, and we'll close on this one.
Okay.
Samoa Joe.
Yes.
A question has been raised. We've raised this question about others before. We raised it about the Ascension last year.
Mm-hmm.
We raised it about Finn Balor as recently as last week. Samoa Joe. Will Samoa Joe ever make it to the main roster? And before you answer this question, putting the question that way kind of intimates that it would be bad for Samoa Joe if he didn't make the main roster. Like, it's something he's reaching towards. Right. And I don't know if that's the case, but the question is, will Samoa Joe ever make it to the main roster? Jeff, what would you say?
I think yes, for maybe a very short program.
Now, and you're yes, because I think this is the only way I would say yes, is if the question is, will he make it to the main roster like once or twice and be on a main show? I think that's probably a given. Everyone goes on the main show.
So you mean a regular working...
But he is a main roster guy who's no longer an NXT guy. He's Kevin Owens. I'll even give you Kevin Owens, because Kevin Owens is still an NXT guy and a main roster guy. He's actually a dual wrestler right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I will give you, as low as Kevin Owens on the totem pole, I want to know if Samoa Joe will ever be a regular on the main roster.
I think yes, for maybe a 3-month run. Okay. I think he'll be that Owens, and then they'll fat shame him or something.
See, I'm going to go, I would say no, that I don't ever think he will make it to the main roster.
And you know what? I'm not even positive of my answer, because I think as long as Kevin Owens is up there and is getting mocked for his weight, I don't think they even look at Joe.
Well, that too, and the fact that, okay, it's not necessarily a bad thing if he doesn't go onto the main roster. Because Samoa Joe signed this deal thinking he wasn't even going to be on the NXT roster full time. He was going to come in when they had big shows, big house shows, and TV, and then work wherever he wanted to elsewhere.
I have doubts that Balor's going to make the main roster.
Yeah, I still have doubts about that, too. Until he's no longer a big thing in NXT. Eventually, he'll have to go up.
Because you need a draw in NXT. That entrance works in small houses. I mean, I had a joke tweet, but now, you know, it's kind of cool. I'd sign up all the former Generation Next guys and just feud them one after another to cut promos on Balor and have great matches with them and run them out a bit. And, you know, and build Balor, to help build Balor more, because they're not doing much to help build him as a character.
Yeah.
He's an entrance, as people have said.
I just don't think it's a bad thing to say that Samoa Joe won't ever make it to the main roster. I don't think there should be a negative connotation there, because maybe that's all he wants. Maybe he wants the few dates. Maybe he wants the light work schedule so he can do other things in entertainment.
I could see him coming up even for like a one shot in this Shield versus Wyatt family feud as the third guy.
He could, but maybe. And maybe, you know, maybe he will one day just find the right place. Maybe there's the right angle that Samoa Joe fits perfectly for, and they'll have him come up and be a regular on the main roster. Maybe that's the case. I don't think it's a bad thing, though, if he doesn't make it, right, per se, because he has his purpose. His purpose is to come in and be on the big shows of NXT, to be one of the solid draws, to help bid young guys. He's got this veteran presence. He's been around the world. So he is a multifaceted name for NXT.
And the only sad part about that is then you don't really make the money of the main roster. But I think Joe has a sweet deal.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. I think he's got a pretty good deal to come in for this NXT gig, and it allows him to still do stuff outside of WWE. Not necessarily indie shows. I'm talking like voiceover work or entertainment projects. Like, that's the stuff that he's wanting to get into. I mean, this
Broadway shows. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, anything. Well, he's done voiceover work. He's been in movies.
Huh.
He has done stuff like this.
He has a better resume than I do. This stinks.
Well, he absolutely does. I would put his second CM Punk match up against anything you've done, Jeff.
Well, you know, I have bad work rate and I only have one style of match.
Right. I mean, God, I had to reprimand you for breaking show kayfabe earlier in the show. Not moving on. And I'm not going to edit that out. I want the world to see how much of an asshole I am.
Oh, hell. We pretty much know it.
Yeah. I'm sad. I'm really a nice guy.
You are.